First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yawning.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, December 17th, 2023. I'm Larry Rhodes, or DJ Doubter 5. And as usual, we have our co-host, Wombat, on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
Hello, Larry. It's good to catch up with you on a weekly basis.
It sure is.
This is a good friend relationship. A good stable. Yeah, like, hey, regardless of what happens in the week, I know I got this time with you, and it's cool to check it.
You realize this show 349, which is pretty darn close to 350, which is like 7 years of shows.
Just about. Weekly shows. Yeah. Before I even had any silver in this beard, I've been part of this. This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You haven't changed much.
Is he gray then, gray now? Yeah. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, sciences, and religion and religious faith. I'm really messing this up. Humanism, science. I got Satanism.
You almost got it. Yeah,
I'm not even going to be talking about that. And sciences. Conversely, we also talk about religions, religious faiths, Pastafarianism, God's holy books, and superstition. If you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not. Even here in Knoxville, in the middle of the Bible Belt, we have a group of 1,100 of us. We're the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, and we'll tell you more about us after the mid-show break, so be sure to stick around. Wombat, what's our topic today?
Get off my farm! And we're going to talk about that in detail, because it's twofold. One, I got a new accessory that I've added to my life, which is a drone that can fly around and do some pretty cool things. And as a result, I want to make sure that I fly responsibly. And so I can talk about some of the certifications and licenses I've done in the great state of Tennessee to make sure that I've demonstrated.
You got to get a license. You got to certify.
Drive
a drone.
Yes. And there's different kinds of drones. Larry, I can see you doing some research. You're like, hey, I want to get into drones. Like, hey, if you have questions, feel free to reach out to
me.
I'm a responsible pilot. Not at that cost. Larry.
I've seen the games you buy.
I've seen the DLC packs you've been looking at. I think it's worthwhile. Think of it as a heirloom, if anything. But anyway, it's about the same cost as like a good PC. If anything, like a mid-tier PC.
I got to have a PC, though.
You got to have a PC.
That's the requirement.
Anyway, the other thing is, because I have this new responsibility of flying around, or like I have the new capability, I would say the more capability or the more power
opportunity, around,
an opportunity too. I also want to have the responsibility along with it. It's like great power, great responsibility. I have more capability. I want to make sure I'm doing and meting it in a proper fashion and going through certifications to demonstrate that that's the case. But we also have gods that are very powerful, very capable, and how responsible is what I would say. And what would a certification
they have even more responsibility, more opportunity and capability than you have.
You would think that would mean that they would have to be even more responsible with the way how they met it out and interact with the public. But I would love to see what a certification for a god looks like. Not only that, but I know for a fact that I can't fly into people's backyards or on their farms because that's their personal property. I won't use their property.
Invasion of privacy.
And land. Yeah. And I wouldn't fly at window height, you know, around an industrial building. Like there's a very specific distance I need to be away from things so that way people don't feel like I'm doing surveillance and that people who have a right to privacy can exercise that. I understand that and I follow that. But God, you're so powerful. You're in everybody's mind. You're in everyone's thoughts. We're going to have to talk about like, what's our expectations of privacy? How do we certify a responsible God? And what kind of tests would that look like? And then along with that, I wanted to also talk about narcissism, because I think it's going to boil down to that at the end of the day. And wanted to discuss what I found to be a really terrible story that I've been wrapped or been invested in as far as like trying to see, make sure it sees justice on YouTube regarding a person known as Gerard the Completionist. He's a YouTube personality who had a mother who died from dementia, right? And he started a charity for dementia research in order to help prevent it and make those who are affected by it lives more easing during those harsh times, right? The whole family would suffer if one person had dementia in it. But it turns out over 10 years for all of his charity work, he has been embezzling all the money. He's not been spending it, and not a single dollar has been given to any charitable research. Yet year after year, he's been saying, I give $670,000 to charity every year, or every dollar I get goes to charity. He hasn't spent a single dollar. And so two YouTubers went through his tax filings for his charitable organization, found out not a single cent in charitable contributions have been given. And his response to that was, I'm going to sue you.
Who does this sound like?
I know. It's like, I'm suing you. How dare you go through my publicly available documents and make me look bad? Yeah. This is slanderous. And so you're going to spend thousands of dollars on a lawsuit, hundreds of thousands on a lawsuit defamation case, even though you're a public figure, just because you're not giving the money to charity? Just give the money to charity. What's wrong with you? Anyway, Larry, what's up?
Go ahead. What gets me about this is that, these YouTubers had to find his taxes, and then they had to go through them and discover all this stuff. The IRS gets his taxes for free every year. I mean, why don't they do something about this?
That's a good point.
And there's a person that has to read his taxes every year and says, oh, he's not giving anything to charity, but they just let it slide.
So no,
that's what kills me.
That's another scary thing too. So imagine this. You would hope that the IRS has so many bigger fish that they're trying to address, because embezzlement of like, say, less than $1 million of funds isn't big potatoes as far as IRS is concerned. So maybe we're hoping, looking at the big stuff, or perhaps it's such that there's just so many malfeasance, there's so many bad players in this space, that the IRS says, listen, we can only prioritize our energy on this because we're constantly being defunded or pulled in certain directions politically, that we can't catch the charities that aren't doing what they should be doing. And that makes me sad. So I respect individual citizen journalists who are willing to look into this. I found like if you as a journalist, just public, can look into this, these public records, you can hold our federal government that we give taxes to accountable for doing the work that we fund them to. And I hope that this leads to a government audit on Gerard the Completionist. He recently quickly donated a majority of the money. So like, we knew he had at least $700,000 approximately. He just gave $600,000 to charity. And I'm like, you know, we have the record to show that you have more than this amount of money. What are you doing? It's like, no, that I just gave that. I did it. I did it. I finally did it. It's like after 10 years, after holding that money for 10 years, it's already lost money from interest. It already from a researcher.
Not to mention the expenses he's been using it for 10 years.
Yes. I mean, he's been taking money from it for dinners, flights, running events. He's put it in a bucket called expenses. It's so horrendous. It really is horrendous.
Well, I'd be surprised if he wasn't using it for personal expenses like rent, car payments, you know, water, utilities, whatever it needs. It's his own personal pocketbook.
Larry, this is where it starts getting darker. We'll get into spiritualism, but we'll get into the spiritual supernatural. But he had this foundation called the Open Hand Foundation that would run a charity event once a year that would get like around $60,000. And so over the course of 10 years, he's had $600,000, right? But his father also had a way to fund the charity with golf events. And these golf events were major. They had major sponsors like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Monster Energy Drink. Like these are on a private golf course that they would rent for a couple of days, have corporate dinners, invite representatives from the companies, do a lot of networking, have raffles. And the expectation is if you look at the sign-up sheet to be a sponsor at their events, you can track what tier a sponsor paid to be on their displays, right? And so if you look at their displays, you can count the number of sponsors and the tiers that they're in and come up with an estimate of how much money they made just from sponsorship.
Minimal.
Not from any. Yeah, so like minimum. it's over like $150,000 of money that they would make from these events per year, just the golf events. So if the charity that was eventually massing up to $600,000 was just a small video game thing that slowly accrued money over a period of time, this golf tournament was rapidly improving the amount of money or aggregating money. Not a single dollar of that money was shown in the tax filings for the Open Hand Foundation. None of it. All of that money disappeared. And not only that, but you had to donate your money into the golf thing by check. It was entirely like off the record. Nothing was reported. And from a researcher myself, I can't think of anything more valuable to me than time. Like, yes, it sucks that I can't get money, but I can refund my budget. I can still be flexible, but I can't get 10 years of funding back. The time that I could have invested that funding 10 years ago to have staff or discoveries or instrumentation or baseline studies done 10 years ago compared to where I am now, it will never be brought back to me.
Right.
And that directly hurts the people that were supposed to be helped, which was the people who were suffering from dementia, families suffering from dementia. And this is a guy who would use his dead mother who died. Like when he gave his, I'm going to sue you video, he put into the comments, not an accountant description, not a receipt, not a bank statement, but his mother's autopsy in order to garner sympathy to get people to get off of his back. It's mind blowing. The lack of humility and empathy and of self-awareness that some people operate under. But what scares me even more is the level of sycophants that still support him even today. He still has friends who are defending him and saying, he's still a good person though. Yes, he committed 10 years of charity fraud and defrauded thousands of people, celebrities and honest, hardworking people alike. But he's cool with me, you know? Like he's helped me out with my Twitter followers.
I'd like to have a beer with him. He's the kind of guy I'd like to have a beer with.
And I start saying to myself, you know, we've had conversations with Richards on the show, not Buffalo, Brooklyn, but like Brooklyn, he's been on the show for a while. I had a call with him last night and he was telling me like that story that you're telling me reminds me of people. And we were talking about Trump. We were talking about like Hitler. But you know what? Like, I can't imagine a bigger narcissist than like Jesus and God. And that's going to shock a lot of people because to them, that's their best friend. But imagine a guy who demands you to worship him. Imagine a guy who comes up
threatens you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Under punishment of internal damnation by his own admittance in writing, or if you will, not really his writing, other people's writing, but like, you know, if we follow the story, that's what his intention is.
Right.
I come up with rules that you need to follow, and I will nail my own son to a planks of wood to spite the rules that you broke that I made up myself. It's so
in Deuteronomy, I think it's 28:52, says that if you don't follow all the rules of this book, I will bring you so low through, they use siege, but we don't have siege as much anymore, I will bring you so low that you will eat your own children.
Wow. I mean,
this is the kind of thing that the Bible tells you in Deuteronomy and other places. It's not just one place. But, I mean, not only on threat of death in this life, but eternal torment and punishments like having to eat your own children.
I mean, you know, if we're going Old Testament, it's the book that kills literally everybody in chapter one, right? Almost everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, and then God created the world, made and had a bunch of people in it. And it's like, you know what? Screw this. Everybody drowns. Let me, it's not technically a restart, but I'll make you a rainbow.
Passive. Everybody drowns. It's not just everybody drowns. God drowns everybody.
Thank you.
You know, it's with forethought and malice of purpose.
It was part of the plan, if you will.
Yeah.
But now, you know, a lot of people would say, hey, that was Old Testament. That doesn't describe the New Testament. And in my mind, why are we making excuses? Are we in agreement that the Old Testament God is the same as the New Testament God, doesn't change, is perfect, everlasting, right? Like, why are you making excuses? What kind of excuse is that to even begin with, right? If we agree it's unchanging and it's a perfect God, then why would you say, well, that was in the Old Testament. It was a different case than different people. It's still a terrible thing regardless. It's like when I hear people say, oh yeah, slavery was back in the day and it was just accepted then. It's like the slaves didn't want to be slaves back then. Like don't come up with excuses just out of argument of it was a long time ago. Not only that, but New Testament, it has the same issue where it's a guy who the whole story of Jesus is, I am the Son of God, and my son or my dad came up with a plan that I will die, you know, due to the elements after, you know, being nailed to planks of wood for your benefit because you broke rules that my dad came up with. And instead of just forgiving you outright, I will be a human sacrifice. If I had a child and I did the same thing, I would be in prison before, you know, the first.
Yeah. But if you think about it, we're still sinners. I mean, yeah. What did he accomplish? Not only that, but he said he died, you know, the believers will say he died for your sins. But in the very next breath, they'll say Jesus lives.
Right.
You know, and theoretically he came back after what, two days? Friday night to Sunday morning. Three days. Anyway, that's one full day plus two parts of another, so about 2 days. Anyway, did he live or did he die? I mean, did he just have a bad weekend for your sins? And then get to be God.
Right.
You know.
Right. You have to imagine that from the perspective of an all-powerful deity, that if you take the story for a literal truth and it was God and God made a version of himself to die and come back, like that's the equivalent of me just doing this. Oh, look at this. Peekaboo, it's gone. And it's back again. Oh, yeah. We're like, oh, that's amazing. I can't believe you did that trick. And for us, as atheists, that's just object permanence. Have you guys not seen that before? Like is that what impresses everybody? That like a guy, a coder who had complete control of the keyboard, deleted some words and then undid control Z and brought the words back. Like, is that what this whole religion's on? Because from the perspective of an all-powerful God, someone that's that capable, having a person die and come back again is easy potatoes compared to like all the other stuff that they can do. Yet that is justification for all the terrible stuff. The act of a human sacrifice. Like, I couldn't imagine anything more heinous than taking a person and using them as a means to an end, whether it's by holding them as property or by sacrificing them for rules that I came up with.
Right. He's all powerful. Theoretically, he could do anything he wants to. He could change any of the rules. He can simply forgive us. I mean, apparently, he's omniscient. He would know that his son would die. He would come back. We would start worshiping him, and then God would forgive us. So he knows the full game plan from the beginning to end. Why didn't he just forget us and cut to the end? Why did he make his son go through all that torture and death, you know, and everybody else in between?
Right, right. He could have just, you know, said, hey, you know what?
Yeah. It's not worth it. I forgive you. Let's just move on.
And so now we get into what kind of person would do something like that. And I would imagine someone who has very little care of, okay, so like if the God character does exist, it's the kind of person who doesn't care about the suffering of others and cares more about their own self-aggrandizement, even if it comes at the expense of the suffering of their own family or their own followers. Goodness knows a number of people have died in the name of Jesus. Goodness knows that even his own son died in his name. It's all for the sake.
Not just dying, but killing.
Yeah, killing. All pawns in this person's master plan, or at least if that's the perspective, that, in my opinion, is the mindset of a narcissist. And I found a really cool prayer written by Dane Craig. And I want to go over it with you, Larry. I want to see if this sounds familiar. So this is called the Narcissist Prayer. The Narcissist Prayer is this. That didn't happen. And if it did, it wasn't that bad. And if it was, that's not a big deal. And if it is, that's not my fault. And if it was, I didn't mean it. And if I did, you deserved it.
Yeah, that's right.
Again, it's always a guilt trip, and I was thinking about the Gerard the Completionist when he was called out for, hey, you're stealing money that should be going to charity in the honor of your dead mother. You started a charity for your dead mother and stole all the money and didn't give a single cent of it. You could have given $1 of the mass of money that you did. You didn't give a single dollar of the what potentially could have been $1 million or more of the funds that you had. And his response was, my mother died when I was young. How dare you accuse me of this? You are not an accountant. You're not a professional. And I will sue you because I've taken this for slander. And this is the last time I'm ever talking about it. And I'm also putting a copy of my mother's autopsy in this report. And I find your accusations heinous and threatening. More or less, he got like very angry. And he
well, the thing about it is, narcissists don't want that kind of attention. I mean, all he had to do is call his bluff, since he had the tax returns and shows that he didn't spend anything on charity. Also, he had proof of the words that he said. So defamation would be upheld. I mean, or not upheld. But I mean, at that point, he should have said, bring it. Because the last thing that that guy wants is more notoriety, more publicity on the things that he did wrong.
Yes. And let me tell you something. Lawsuits are expensive. So to see him so willing to, instead of just give up the money that he had or take all the money that he was accruing and just give it to charity, but instead use that funding to apply to lawyers to better protect his image, is such, in my opinion, such the paradigm shift of, oh, this guy is a terrible person. And so when I go through the narcissist prayer, I'm thinking in my head, who said things like this? And I can see Trump saying things like this, but I can also see even God saying, or followers of Christianity, and like, you know, other religions too. But honestly, the ones that annoy me the most are the ones that affected my life the most. Like, I'm sure there's other religions that have Zeus or Muhammad or Jade following very similar conventions. But the thing of it, the fact of the matter is, in this state of Tennessee, in this country, the ones that we are most affected by are the followers of the Christian faith, all the different demographics of it, all pretending to act together to make it, to some extent, our lives more miserable, more inhibited for social progress, and essentially just dragging us down as dead weight, because these minds that are indoctrinated could be so much more optimized for social interactions, better impact in society, better social welfare, science, better teaching in engineers. And instead, we just have people who are comfortable with like these really bad narratives. Yeah. So
I prefer to say that they're trying to drag us back, not down. They're trying, well, they're by definition conservative, and conservatives want to conserve the past. In other words, keep the way we used to be and fight progress.
Right.
And to me, that's the same thing as, like, if you want to go back to where we were, name a time which we should live in, which was good. And I can give you 100 reasons why we shouldn't go back to that particular time.
Sure. But
the only thing that they know of, it was they were happier then.
Right. But you know what? Here's the weird thing. I have some conservative viewpoints on topics that aren't related to religion, like in the pact of personal property, or, you know, loving your country, or military safety and duty, and respecting veterans and being able to make sure that they have like access to social health care, mental health care. I believe should be a conservative issue. Like, hey, if we're saying like veterans should have physical health care, they should also have mental health care too. Like post-traumatic stress disorder is a real thing. We should recognize it, study it, and make sure that, you know, anyone that we put into stressful situations come out of it mentally okay. Taxes, some of like the tax code could be completely cleaned up. We should also take lobbying out of like how we do our taxes, so that the government just says, this is how much money we need from you, and then we just pay that money. I hate filling out a form. I just want you to just tell me what I owe you, because when I don't pay you what I owe you, you send me another letter and you're like, you owe me actually $55 more. Like, if you knew the number, don't make me waste my time doing the math. Just tell me what I owe you. Just let it be a thing on irs.gov. Right. And I just say, just automatically deduct it from my, why did we make it so complicated? Because other companies want to profit from our confusion, and like, get that out of the system. Like, I have some conservative viewpoints on that. But the thing is, I feel like conservatism has been so steadily, and I think it's been a slow adoption of trying to ingrain itself with religious thinking as well, to the point where they're largely inseparable and in many cases contradictory with what one wants versus the other. So like, if we want small government, then why do we also want a government that dictates whether a woman has a right to her own body? Like, you can't have those two at the same time.
Well, for me, I think it's two competing ideologies. Hmm. I mean, you got the government. You got people saying, "I don't want government in my life," but they also adhere to this religion, who their preachers are telling them every Sunday, you know, do not kill. And well, by the way, if you do an abortion, that's killing. So go out there and fight that, and make sure. In order to fight it, you have to have laws against it. If you have laws, you got to have punishments. You know, et cetera, et cetera. It just carries the whole thing directly in opposition to what they wanted in the first place, which was small government.
Right. Like a government that doesn't tell you who to love, a government that doesn't tell you what to do with your own body, a government that doesn't tell you, hey, if there's a substance out there that we've determined scientifically is not harmful, you can take it, you can not take it. It's up to you to determine what you want. But like, if that is the case, then how did this combination of ideologies even come together? The fact of the matter is, it's because you have a group of people that have a low standard of evidence. And that's a targetable group for interest that needs people to vote and give them power. And so in the same narcissist playbook, and I see we're getting close to the bottom of the half, I find that it is very similar to a narcissist looking for marks to be part of his, you know, upbringing, because a narcissist by himself isn't very powerful, but one with a bunch of followers is. And so the Republican Party was saying at some point, we need people to vote for us. Who do we placate to? Even if our views are completely antithetical to what they believe, who can we just make be on our side? And they've gotten the religious right to be a part of it. And as a result, now you just have these weird conflictory point of views that are largely anti-science, even though we want to promote science and make America number one. We want to have healthy Americans, but you also have religious right who are like, we're anti-vax because our pastors told us science is evil and vaccines are snake poison. So don't get vaccinated. We want to be freedom. We want freedom at all costs, but we also need to have the government tell us that women can't have access to their own bodies, and that if you're a male and like another male, there's something wrong with you, so you shouldn't be allowed to get married to them. Like, you can't have the two together. You can't have the USA flag and the don't tread on me flag, because guess who's treading on you? It's the USA that's asking for taxes. Like, you need to get it's the guy who wears the American tattoo on one sleeve and the Confederate tattoo on the other sleeve. And I'm like, you don't realize that those two things don't like each other. You should really consider
antithetical,
that they are antithetical, that they, and that just makes you, the more antithetical your viewpoints are, the more of a mark you are for narcissists to come by and take your power away from you.
Right.
And that's the narcissist playbook. So that didn't happen. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's go to break and we'll continue this just in a moment. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
To multiply, why must any of the children, why must they die? So we asked the Lord, and the Lord said, man means nothing, he means less to me cactus flower on the humblest yucca tree. He chases round the desert 'cause he thinks that's where I'll be, and that's why I love mankind. I recoil in horror from the foulness of thee, all from the squalor and the filth and the misery. How we laugh up here in heaven at the prayers you offer me, and
Welcome back to the second half of the Digital Freethought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's take just a moment to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 21st year and have 1,100 members. We have also have weekly in-person meetings every Tuesday evening in Knoxville's Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us inside at the high top tables or if it's pretty weather, outside on the deck. You can also find us online on Facebook, meetup.com, or at our website, KnoxvilleAtheist.org. You can just Google Knoxville Atheist if you want to. That's just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one. Right. Wombat, where do you want to pick up?
I want to get back to the Narcissus Prayer and how we could use it as a criteria to figure out if gods are certified to be gods over us, right? The Narcissus Prayer, again, is that didn't happen. And if it did, it wasn't that bad. And if it was, that's not a big deal. And if it is, that's not my fault. And if it was, I didn't mean it. And if I did, you deserved it.
How many times have you heard that in conversation, though? I mean, think about it. You're talking to people and they use that kind of rationale all the way up to the top.
It is.
Dead giveaway.
Very, very true. It's frustrating and it's a dead giveaway. But like, let's do this in microcosm. So I called the show Get Off My Farm, right? There's a story where Jesus goes to with his followers to some, he's walking down the road. He sees a fig tree growing in someone else's property and there's no figs on the fig tree. And he's like, you know what? I hate that. And he points at the fig tree and it shrivels up and dies and turns to ash and it's gone forever and ever and ever. Amen. You know, people use that as a story to show, look how powerful God or Jesus is. He could just point at things and they die. In my mind, I say, you know, that guy, someone planted that fig tree. He didn't own that fig tree. That didn't belong to him. Like someone made that and he's going to wake up in the morning or she's going to wake up in the morning. Let's be honest. It was Mesopotamia Bronze Age. It's going to be some guy wakes up and he's like, hey, who took my fig tree? Where'd it go? What happened? It's not the right time of year. Yeah, who killed my figs? There weren't any figs on the fig tree. What's going on? So, you know, if he goes, let's say the fig tree farmer goes up to God and it's like, hey, God, you totally destroyed my fig tree. That didn't happen. That's not how the story went. It's like, no, it did happen. In fact, your followers were firsthand witnesses. Let's assuming that they were the ones who wrote the Bible. They weren't. We know that. But you even wrote in the story multiple accounts. At least four of them said that you did this.
And well, it was out of season.
It's not a season. What's wrong with you? I need that to feed my family. I'm a fig tree. I sell fruit. It's like, well, it's not that bad. It's a fig tree. It's not like it was a person. And it is a big deal because it was my property. You violated the things that belong to me and the things that I invested in. And he says, like, okay, Jesus can be like, well, that's not my fault. You're a sinner. You understand that? The only way for you were already evil by birth. Just due to the fact that Adam and Eve were tricked into eating a fruit. There was a trapdoor in paradise that God set up for them and they settled for the bait. And it's not like I meant to destroy your fig tree. And even if I did, you deserved it. Could you imagine like a Trump like Jesus? I can just from like hearing a story like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing about it is there was no hell before Jesus. I mean, so the Old Testament, bad as it was, you know, when you died, that was it. But Jesus brought in the afterlife in the New Testament and the choice of going to my Father's house or to the bad place. And I mean, he was the whole thing brought in eternal torment. Well, I mean, what could possibly be worse than that? And what for? For something that your distant ancestors did. I mean, how many times in the Bible says a son cannot be punished for the sins of the father? And then they do this all the way down through the whole story.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the whole basis of the story. But we would be remiss if we didn't say that the Bible has some contradictions in it, right? But you know what? Maybe that's a good thing that we should go into. So we did at a microcosm, a fig tree, get off my farm. The reason why I said get off my farm is because even I know as a novice drone pilot, someone who's just like picked up a drone and is flying around and recommending to Larry that it's worth the investment. I don't know. I don't know what you're He says, like, no, I'm saving up for Starfield 2. There's no
$1,400 is a
bit. It's $999 now on Best Buy. That's the deal to get. It's the best. If you don't want the best money you can get like a cheap drone for $89. I guarantee you're going to lose it in a day because that's not going to be smart enough to fly back to you when you lose it. It's not going to be smart enough to fly back to you. The one I got is really cool. I recommend it, but I also know not to take off and land on other people's private property. I know not to fly within 150 feet within critical infrastructure, like power lines, water treatment facilities, government buildings, etc. I know not to look or use it for surveillance into people's backyards. Like, I know not to harass people. I know to stay away from fireworks displays, that I can't go to festivals where there's more than 100 people. There's so many rules that come with being a well-educated, licensed pilot for drones that if you were to ask me, like, hey, I'm the narcissist prayer. Hey, Ty, I saw you flying at window height on this neighborhood building. It's like, no, you're right. I did that. I apologize. Here's my license certificate. Hopefully there's no damages, but you're more than welcome to report it because my drone has its sticker. The tag is on the sticker. So let's say I accidentally land my drone behind someone's backyard. They can take that sticker. They don't have to argue with me. They'll immediately know how to find me and report me, right? Like I won't show it on the webcam, but like I'm an accredited and I make sure that I'm accountable for the power that I have. So the first line of the narcissist prayer, that didn't happen, doesn't happen with me. I'm immediately accountable. But for God, even on the concept of something like slavery, right? There are slaves in the Bible and God actually advocates for what kind of slaves and how to treat your slaves and how to beat them and how
to sell your daughter into slavery
and how to keep them even when they admit they don't want to be slaves anymore and how to trick them so that you can sell, you can sell them, but you can keep their kids and then ask them, do you want to still stay with me as a slave master? And they'd be like, well, I need to stay with my family. It's like, hey, there's my strategy.
But even if he left, he had the family in perpetuity. As slaves.
It's so messed up. Messed up. So if you talk to someone, I've had conversations like this in video when I was in Kentucky, but you know, I said, hey, there's slavery in the Bible, Ecclesiastes. Like, we can pull up that chapter right now. Well, that didn't happen. It's not real slavery. And if it was, it wasn't that bad. And if it was that bad, it's not that big of a deal. And it's also not God's fault. It was just the people at the time. And God didn't mean
that was then. Yeah.
If it was supposed to be slaves, they deserve to be slaves. Like, I can't handle the use of people as property as a justification for why someone's good. You know, the idea that someone could be so powerful that morality doesn't apply to them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many pushups would I need to do before murder is okay and I can get away with it? There's no amount, right? Then why do we let God get away with murder? The intended killing of somebody, like the illegal intended killing of somebody. He's killed people in the Bible, like from fig trees to smiting of sodomites to wars that he reported in his name, like
to killing people for taking a census.
The book chapter one starts with, I am actively drowning every single person on the planet. Meanwhile, the devil is like in this book being like, hey, I've never done anything like that. It's like, okay, I see what you're doing, God. I'm just back here just being like, hey, you should eat fruit. That's the worst thing I've ever done. It's like, maybe you should eat some fruit. Maybe you should like educate
yourself. That's where it all started.
Don't tell them to educate themselves. Like, I just said to eat some fruit. I'm punishing you. Okay, anyway. That was a bit of a tangent. The idea.
Let's go back to this certification.
Yes.
You got certified. That means there's a certifying body.
Correct. Oh, very good.
Where are we going to get a certifying body for God?
So here's the great thing. Who represents the certifying body other than members of the public that get elevated to that office, right? Because one, they're affected by the people who are flying, the public, and they represent the public as a speaking body to say, these are our wishes of people who will use our airspace as a shared space. And these are the rules that we've come to as a social contract and as representatives of the public. You know, like, we don't have people in Australia determining what we do with the airspace in America. Right. We have people in America determining what we do with the airspace in America. And Australia has its own rules with their own representatives. Yeah. So it is determined by that group. So I believe that if we were to make a God certification that follows like this narcissist prayer, it should be run by people who are subject to God's will and whim, just in the same way that the Board for Certification, Federal Aviation Agency.
But people who represent the will of the rest of us.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And I would love to see it if God is affecting both his followers and his non-followers. If his non-followers are going to hell because they don't follow that God, that's being affected by them. So we should have that panel be representative of people of all faiths, including those of no faith whatsoever. And the rule should just be, hey, based on our assessment, maybe one of us agreed that you're not a narcissist, but the overwhelming majority of us did. And as a result, we're taking away your God license because you failed the narcissist prayer test.
Yeah, not only did he fail to provide all that's good for us, he actively worked against us and killed quite a few of us, most of us at one time.
Not only that, but listen, let's say God did pass. Here's the benefit. Now we have a barcode tag for any sort of miracle that happens on Earth. We will know exactly which God or who did that miracle. If someone immediately loses a leg and then it grows back, or they found their keys in the morning, regardless of whatever happened, you'll have a little ticketed receipt. And just like we did with Gerard the Completionist, we can actually look at the publicly available tax code record. We can see the record and be like, God, you did like a lot of really cool miracles. That time where you, you thought you had no gum. Some guy thought he had no gum and it found out he had extra gum in his pocket. That was a miracle. You got that one done. You had I found an extra quarter in my pocket for laundry. That was awesome. You got the, everything that people call miracles these days. All these church attendants feeling that they're filled with the Holy Spirit. You got that. Nice, nice, nice. Okay, you've been pretty good. Oh, I see here that you gave some kid a debilitating heart illness. That's also you too, right? Like, I don't think we can offset the value of this versus all these random things that you've been doing. Like, we're going to do an audit. And based on our audit, we found that your performance as a God doesn't meet the certification that we set up, because you can't just do a bunch of random nice things and then use that to get away with some really terrible things too, right? So we are taking away your certification. You're free to apply again. Until then, your powers have been revoked. Thank you very much for coming to the God certification agency. Who's next? Yeah. Muhammad? Yeah. Okay, Muhammad.
Take our stamp. Ka-chunk.
Yeah. Rejected. Allah, you're next in line. Pastafarian God. Okay, you're next in line. Okay, Allah's not here. He left too. Okay, he already knew he was going to pass. Pastafarian God, let's see what you come up with. If Dredd was here, I'd love to see if Pastafarian God could pass the narcissist prayer test. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
And get through an audit.
Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't even care if you worship him or not. He has the God back guarantee. So he's God pretty back much guarantee. A pass. Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Yeah, there's that. And then I wish you rather wouldn't versus the actual commandments. Right. Seems large. I'm going to see this. I would say like there's probably going to be like a weird probationary period because he comes off as sort of a wet noodle. And I don't mean that. I mean it in both sort of mean as a both pun. It's like, it doesn't seem like you're actually doing anything. It's like, not really, not that much. I'm like, okay, well, you know, you're taking up space, but you know, we're got to certify somebody. I'll approve. Okay, you're good. Just continue to not do anything.
no harm, no foul.
No harm, no foul. Okay, yes. Good point. All right. So let's see. Overall takeaways on the show of getting off my lawn. More power, more responsibility. And if you aren't exercising that power well, then in my opinion, you would have cause and justification to have your actions be reviewed by a third party. And what we have right now is a system with God where there's no third party accountability. And so we have a God that's just freely doing, if that God exists.
Well, from an atheist standpoint, there is no God, of course, but we have preachers who have no accountability. You know, they're the ultimate authority in their little enclave, their little cult, as it were. And they have no accountability other than, you know, to the whim of the people. However, the people are so cowed by the authority of the supposed God that they mostly won't won't oppose the will of the preacher.
Hmm.
So he's more cases than not, I'll put it that way, he would be an example of a narcissist. No.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, if we can't hold the God accountable, then the people who speak for him, we should be. Mm-hmm. We should be holding. And it's easy to hide right. behind a God. We should be holding our pastors accountable, preachers accountable, megachurch leaders, televangelists, if you will. Politicians who don't do their job fairly and only subside by their religion and try to push that on other people. Those are the people who should hold accountable. People. Because we can hold people accountable and don't let them trick you by pointing at their God. Look at them. When you say, and this is a good point, very good point, Larry. When someone says, I believe in God, and you say, I don't believe in that God, you're taking on a lot of, while you're being accurate, you're taking on a lot of potential burden of going down flow charts that don't address the main point, which is, I don't believe you. I don't believe you when right. you say there's a God.
Right.
So you come up with a better argument because I don't believe you. Yeah. It's not this God that we're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't believe you. Mm-hmm. So if you make me believe you, then I'll believe you. But until then, I don't believe you. I make sure that's the point. It sounds a bit more complicated. Yeah,
they always like to come back. Well, who are you to question God?
I'm talking to God. You. Talking yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't believe you when you say there's a God. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's my point of an atheist. Like, it's not a question of what I believe in your God. It's whether I believe you. All right. Anyway, we do have some listener comments. Dada's Trading Room had a issue with us saying your truths, that they're potentially, well, not necessarily that he believes that they're subjective truths. We've had him as a commenter on the show before, but he does want to know, how do we know anything about an objective reality? If there is such a thing, if we can distinguish subjective truths from objective truths, how do we know anything about objective reality? What's our method? So he asked specifically, I have to ask how you know that there is an objective reality. And even if there was an objective reality, second part to the question, because he already knows what you're going to say, Larry. And even if there was an objective reality, how would you know what it is objectively? Okay. Go on ahead, Larry.
The only thing I can say is, you know, by talking to other people and getting feedback from the other entities that inhabit this reality with you. But my comeback to that is, how do you know there's a Bible? I mean, aren't you using your senses to look at a book and read what's on it? I mean, if objective reality is not real, which I assume is where you're going, then how can we even assume that a Bible is real? Or the words on it are real, or that it says what it does. You know, we only have one option. That's to trust our senses until we find our senses are lying to us. That's all we got. We don't have anything besides senses.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. We're stuck with the reality that we can observe and perceive. And when we contextualize our objective reality, it's always going to be limited by that. So as a result, it's not so much a distinguish of saying, hey, there's no such thing as objective reality. In my head, it's you should never be 100% confident or 0% confident about the conclusions you make, because you have to be aware of the fact that you are a person subject to error just due to the fact that the senses that we have are also subject to error, right? We can be confused. We can be not in our best state. We can be distracted. We can be persuaded erroneously.
Yeah, sometimes our senses lie to us. We have gaps in our senses. Our brain will fill in those gaps and technically lie to us. But all we have is what we have going on. All we have is the senses and the input and the logic that we have.
And so the best way to determine as confidently as we are the conditions about our environment is by cross-referencing them with other people. And if we do so enough times, then hopefully we can come up with a self-correcting mechanism such that when we get new information that we can test, that we find is verifiable, falsifiable, repeatable, then we can adjust the model of reality that we set up. But understand that it's just a model, not reality itself. That's all what we can do with our objective reality. What do you think, Larry?
Yeah, another thing that gets me about this particular line that this person
souls.
Was... No. I'll work it in there, though. Trust me.
Lead back to souls. Okay, go ahead.
No, it's how willing this person is or is willing to throw out all of reality if we don't trust one God that he has postulated. In other words, if somebody questions his little version of reality, then all of reality and all of education and all of our learning and knowledge down through the ages just needs to be tossed out. How do you know that reality is real? How do you know objective reality is real? I mean, he's saying question everything. If you don't,
right.
If you question my God, you question everything. Everything else is just up in the air. And he throws it all out. That's what drives me crazy.
Larry, here's the distinction that I'd make. I don't think he's necessarily purporting another God belief, but he is saying essentially like, you know, with religion does come a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
Like, I know an answer. I have an answer. Here's the answer. But science is not about that. Science is willing to admit, I don't know, or we don't know yet, or this is undefined, or we're still figuring it out, or this is the area of ambiguity that we need to look
at. Or they have a measure of probability for something to happen. They'll even break it down into, this is 75% probable, you know.
Yes.
But how do you measure the probability of God if you've never encountered one physically?
Very true.
Never had an example.
And Larry, along with that is a satisfying answer is one that's very opaque, you know, right? Like it's very clear and you understand it. An unsatisfying answer that even is true, right, is one that is very ambiguous or comes with a bunch of disclaimers or red tape associated with it or... this is true. By the way, our testing is only accurate within 95%. There's still a 5% chance that blah, blah, blah. Like when you get the weather report and you say, it's going to rain today. It doesn't say that. It never says that. It says there's a 30% chance of rain. Here's your relative humidity. It's like, what does that mean? Is it going to rain 30% today? Is it somewhere raining in my town? Like with a 100% chance, but only 30% of my town is going to get the rain. What do you mean by that? And just tell me if it's going to rain or not.
I used to kid saying, if it says 30% chance of rain here in Knoxville, it's going to rain 30% of the time.
Yeah. Is it going to rain 30% of the time? Explain these numbers to me. That's not frustrating. So we live in a world where satisfying lies outweigh unsatisfying truths. And so when someone says, hey, how do you know objective reality? I would say, get prepared for a long and nuanced answer. Because that's going to be the response to a big question like that.
Right.
You can phrase really questions in a simple
way. If we are a brain in a jar, and you know some devil is sending us sensory input, then there's not much we can do about it. But the thing that we can do is we can react to the stimulus that we see from our world around us.
Correct.
Whatever.
And more importantly, we can still be empathetic bodies, right?
Right?
We can still recognize, hey, even though I'm okay, my needs are needed. Well, who else can help?
Yeah.
Who else
but you
help?
Can even say that so much so that when you interact with other people and you get their feedback, and it's that we have a lot of common feedback about our reality, if you're going to reject all of that, that way lies insanity. I mean, because you have nothing to lay your sanity on.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. You need a baseline. You need a baseline, but it also needs to be recognized that all we're doing right now is building models for reality. And the best kind of model for reality is one that's constantly willing to learn, self-adjust, and become more accurate.
Right.
And when I say that, wouldn't it be great if that model had a name? And it does. It's called science. It's really, really good. Science is not, by the way, a dogmatic force that says this is this, that's that, and that's the way how it is and how it always will be.
No.
Science is
a method.
Like, it's a method, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's a method that's cooperative with everybody. And the more people that help out that method, similar to like Wikipedia, the more informative it becomes. And yeah, sometimes Wikipedia gets things wrong. Sometimes science gets things wrong. But the process of science is that we use science to understand, okay, if I was using Wikipedia, I'm like, hey, this article's wrong. I'm going to fix it. And then you fix it. You used all the tools within Wikipedia to address an error that you found. Science works in a very similar way. When someone states something that's not accurate, we can test what they said, demonstrate that it's inaccurate, and fix it and become closer.
And not one time has science ever been corrected by religion. It's always been corrected by more science.
Or was that time I couldn't find my keys and I said, scientifically, I know they're on my pants, but they're not on my pants. And so I prayed and they ended up being in my shower. And I was like, oh, thank you, God,
for
completely overthrowing and curb stopping science. I'm not going to tell anyone about this. I must keep this secret a secret. No, like, it's true. There's never been a condition where, you know, a scientific process has been overwritten by religion. Because at the point where when you can test it and you can process it and you can demonstrate it and show that it's repeatable, falsifiable, and objectively tested, it's no longer in the realm of religion anymore. In fact, religion was like sort of like this, hey, religion explains everything and science is this new kid on the street that's all about testing, but you're a little nerd. And then science kept coming up with useful things, useful tools, useful practices, longer life, medicine, tools to see the world. And religion started to become smaller and smaller to where they were sharing different platforms. We'll let science explain the what, but religion will explain the why. Now science has taken over so much that science is the when, the what, the how, the why, and religion's just back there like, we're just here for emotional support. If anyone has any questions about anything else that science doesn't answer, we're here just letting you know. We'll fill in the gaps. We'll be here in case anybody needs us. And what we need is religion to just like quietly.
But so many times, religion, even in that area, religion doesn't practice what it preaches.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Thoughtful understanding. Oh my gosh, we're near the end of the show, Larry. We're getting there. All the way to the end. Yeah. Here's my recommendations, Larry. Listen, I'm not saying you have to get that drone, but look into it.
I've looked into drones for a long time. I like the concept of it. I wish I had them. The one thing,
get one.
Let me ask you, how loud is yours?
Let's see. That's a really good question. So I fly at 400 feet. Which is the maximum airspace allotted to me. When I'm at 400 feet, I can't hear my drone anymore. If I flew it, I can also fly my drone for practice inside my own apartment that I own. That's my own space. My cat doesn't freak out to the sound of the drone. Really? I don't. And you can look on YouTube for decibel limits for how low the drones are. Yeah. It's not like ear splitting, but it's like I was playing a song on my phone at max volume.
Well, compared to a vacuum cleaner.
It's quieter than a vacuum cleaner, but it's a higher pitch too.
Okay. Well, no, I've always enjoyed the thought of having one. Maybe I'll get something. I mean, you can buy them down to like $100 or $200 or $300.
You can. I have some models that are like $100 in my closet. Yeah, back
so
here.
Maybe I should get something like that just to try it out and see how I'd like it. Now, I like the thought about like doing a walk down a beautiful walkway and having it follow me or something. To do that, but I just haven't gotten around to getting into it.
The thing is, they'll never have a drone that flies that you can talk and record audio with. They'll always be so loud and
so windy. Loud, right?
You'll have to do your audio ADR. You'll have to do it after.
Okay, we probably need to go on then. I mean, our time's running out pretty quick. So you got anything you want to tell us about?
Be responsible and get off people's farms. You can find my stuff on Let's Chat on YouTube, and we'll be here as we always are to talk about sciences, the lack of the lack of good standards and why we need to follow them and ask more questions. And then, of course, most importantly, why souls exist, why they've always existed, and why they will always, always be present. And who better to speak on souls than our own Larry Rhodes?
Prove it. My content can be found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for the radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject. My YouTube channel is at Doubter5. You can find my book, Atheism, What's It All About, on Amazon. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock on WZO Radio. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.